We'll call our meeting to order. Just before we get started here, April, would you just certify that we are in compliance, that we've been properly notified for tonight's meeting?
Yes, it was published in Kenosha News July 29th and August 3rd, as well as on the weekly meeting schedule for tonight's meeting.
Okay, great, thank you. Our interim director unexpectedly wasn't able to be here tonight, Chrissy, but she did contact me with an update that she'd like me to share. I'll do that in just a moment here. Then excited about hearing about the summer parks programming and youth and governance and any other updates that UW Extension has for us. So that being said, for those of you that may not have heard, UW Extension has hired an official new director, and she is in the room here with us tonight. It is none other than our very own Terry Ward. We're excited to have Terry serving in this new role, and know that you'll do a great job, and we look forward to working together with you as a committee. So, yeah, thank you, Terry. Thank you.
Thank you all very much, and I'll be sharing my cards and email information anytime I can support or answer questions. I'm here, so
great.
Don't hesitate to reach out.
Well, Daniel, if I can say
one thing. Amy, yes.
I was on the search and screen committee that we decided in the end, obviously, that Terry was the best fit. And some of her qualifications are, like, overseeing for, what was it, that you were FoodWise program administrator?
The administrator for 7 years.
7 years, and they are one of the highest performing of all statewide FoodWise offices. So, like, Terry really brought that bar up. And they have the most contacts of any, you know, I think, even more so than Milwaukee County. I mean, just to demonstrate that, I mean, she is highly, highly qualified, and to bring her into our Area Extension Director role is really, really exciting. So thank you for your willingness to step into this role, because it's challenging. It's challenging. Two counties and three offices, and just very diverse populations, and you know, throughout the county. So thank you for stepping into this role.
My pleasure. Thank you, Amy, and I look forward to the challenge. I think it's going to be great.
Thanks as well, Terry, for, you know, the support that you provided, Amy as well, and any other educators, the support you provided during this time of transition, you know, after Bev's retirement. So from my perspective, things seem to go pretty smoothly these last couple of months, and we look forward to better and brighter days ahead. So,
excellent.
Good. Okay, well, that being said, let's jump right into agenda item number two, our summer parks programming. And I, for one, have been trying to squeeze every little bit of fun out of this summer that we can. This is the time of the year that we Wisconsinites live for. And so look forward to hearing an update about summer parks programming.
Thank you. I'm going to stand. Well, thank you for having me. My name is Nicole Sakaro-Lifsky, and I'm the teaching coordinator for FoodWise Racine and Kenosha Counties. I started out a little over 5 years ago as an educator and moved up into the teaching coordinator role this past summer. So tonight we'll be talking about a little bit about the Summer Parks program. So we can just advance to the... So before we begin, though, I just want to put this up here. Our lives in the last 16 months, we've learned the word pivot very well. And I wanted to give credit to Terry for leading all the changes that we had to do in adapting our delivery systems for education and our educators. I think this is a good fit. 16 months, we will teach you from a room. We will teach you on a Zoom. We will teach you using a mouse. We will teach you from our house. We will teach you here or there. We will teach you anywhere. And that's really been our spirit. So when summer came along, we will teach you in the park. We were so excited, let me tell you, that we could get into the parks, because these kids have been behind computers for 16 months. And we really were just excited to get face-to-face and to take a curriculum that we've been doing in the past and making some more adjustments to even make it more dynamic and more fun and safe at the same time. So with that, I'll ask you to continue. So why summer parks? We've partnered with the Kenosha Parks Alliance. This program has been going for several years. And just to give you a little history of where it came from and why we're proud to be partners with the Kenosha Parks Alliance, I have a short video. Okay.
just said, no, you shouldn't go to the park. It's too dangerous. People who have been in that neighborhood for quite some time, they weren't going to the park anymore.
Mayor had wanted a city department to take a leadership role, and he thought what department would be better than the Kenosha Public Library?
Well, I'm an avid believer in libraries. I think that one of the opportunities that I think a lot of us miss out on in municipalities is not understanding how important libraries are. One of the things I did was to bring the library in as one of the key components of this program. And they have done an excellent job in helping bring this program along.
And as we look at ways to engage our youth, where we're lacking there, we had a part that was potentially underutilized. This one with legitimate use of it and got the students to become engaged in activities they probably wouldn't otherwise be.
We have faith-based, we have the schools, we have some businesses, we have some elected officials, nonprofits, we have community partners, and we have the police department that, you know, are all at the table trying to make a difference. And really our number one goal is to bring the community back to these local parks.
And then well foods, we have an ice cream cone. you know, we're not having those every day. It's a special occasion. So that's really how we teach it, based on the nutrition facts label. And then based on that, we kind of apply the knowledge, we'll do a game. Sometimes, this year we kind of kicked it up a notch. We had a fishing game, so we made like these fishing poles with magnets, and they would fish for breakfast, and each fish was the color of my plate, and they would get the fish and, you know, come up with a breakfast based on the colors they pulled. Or if you've ever, who's played Red Light, Green Light as a kid? Some people. So we did like a beverage lesson, and we call out like water. What do you think that is?
Green,
right? We'd say, you know, soda, red, chocolate milk, yellow, right? So we played those types of games to get them out and active and just really have fun. We really wanted this to be fun for the kids. At the end, they had a build your own snack. With COVID, we can't do like a communal cooking experience. So they got little kits and they made their own kind of little snacks that tied to each lesson. So our numbers started out the first year with 60 students at a couple sites. 2019, we got momentum, we're at 72. And then, you know, like anything else, 2020 came, nothing. We got canceled, the whole program got canceled. So this year we're at 34, so we did take quite a hit. Various reasons, I think the biggest reasons is parents, unless they were in, a lot of times, some kids from the neighborhood would come who maybe weren't in summer school. But now with kids not being vaccinated in this age group, parents are a little reluctant maybe to send their children, so just various reasons. So yeah, we had a lot less kids this year. So just some of the outcomes. One of the students shared with us, she made three of the recipes from class at home. That's what we're most excited about, because when we take that learning home, we know our job is working. It's working, right? It's getting in the house. Two top recipes the kids really loved was water with a kick. Sometimes we call it spa water. It's just letting fruit, you know, their favorite fruit sit in a pitcher for 24 hours and then serving that as an alternative to soda. Apple cookies, just some apple round slices. We did like a sun butter because of allergies, and then they had little kits of different whole grain cereals and dried fruit, and they could do some art with it too and make those, make faces and stuff like that, and eat those. Some additional outcomes. I'm not going to read all these, but you can see some of the quotes that some of the kids gave us on our last day. We did ask for them to write down, like, what is something new you learned, or what is something maybe you do at home now that you do differently from being, you know, from learning with us. My favorite one is the second one. That little girl said, "My mom is being warned for diabetes," and she said, "and she has to count this and that." And I went home and I taught her how to do the nutrition fast label, and that's really what we like, those types of things to hear.
Can you explain what the 520 label
is? Oh yeah, sure.
Sorry, I see that at the bottom.
Sure.
The thing I learned was how to tell if things are high or low in the nutrition facts using the 520 rule.
So the 520 rule is, a lot of people when they look at a nutrition facts label, they're looking at like grams of fat or grams of this and that. But really, when we teach kids and adults, we have them look at the percent daily value. And there's something called the 520 rule. It's a big, you know, column with percentages. A lot of times, I know as a kid, I like ignored it. I didn't know what that was. I don't want to do math, you know. But basically, we say anything that's 20% or higher, that's a high nutrient. Anything 5% or less is a low nutrient. That's an easy concept. Then we teach them, what do you want to be high, right? So the vitamins and minerals and fiber, we want those numbers to be higher, like 20% or higher. If we're seeing sodium, fat, saturated fat, and added sugars, right, percentage over like 20 or higher, that's like a warning, like a red light. So that's really what the 520 rule is.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sure. There's just some pictures. So we have one little guy trying his little apple round. Jill's one of our educators there in the middle, and Fabiola's one of our bilingual educators there at Brass. Three pictures on the bottom, they looked great on Pinterest, right? We've done this one for a couple years now. It never looks like Pinterest, but the kids love it. They're just little fruit and veggie bugs that we do with the fruit and veggie lesson. Again, that's sun butter, and then that's your little breakfast parfait that was really popular. And then one of our partners, Carl Erickson, he directs the Elder Outreach Center. He just, you know, sent this at the end to us, and I said, hey, can we use that? But he just thanked us, saying that his third and fourth graders just had a great time. And when they come to sample the food, that was like the highlight of their day. So we always have kids come in and they say, what are we eating today? And it's always at the end of the lesson. And it's like, the thing is, we say, what are we learning today? It's about what we're learning, and then we're going to eat the, you know, thing that's tied to that. So that's everything for tonight. Are there any questions?
That sounds really fun.
It was a lot of fun. I think we all just needed that for our soul and the kids' souls, is like to be with them. And just to, you know, we did a lot of changes. Our team sat this spring and like went through every lesson to see how can we even make it better. You know, we're constantly fine-tuning and improving things. And this year it's like, how fun can we make this? Let's go all out. So I do have a couple of things I want to just kind of pass around. At the end, the last day, we shared like a little cookbook, all the tastes that we made with the kids. So then they had this to take home. So this is what we had given them on the last day. And then this is just some pamphlets that are put up by the USDA. And they just happened to jive. There was like one with every lesson we did. And they had a recipe on the back. So the kids got additional recipes. So this one particular we gave out for the fruit veggie lesson. But we just kind of lucked out. We get these for free through the USDA, and I was like, hey, let's give them a little extra every day. So when they came, they got a little something too. So again, our education, our team was really great. It's hard to be doing something for 16 months, and you're kind of thought to think a certain way, like nobody can, you know, it's just like we've been conditioned. And so to get out and be with kids, and they really embraced it, and they did amazing, so. We have a great team. So. Thank you.
Go ahead. Do you think you'll have opportunity next summer to expand sites specifically?
We hope so. This year we were down to educators. Okay. So we did as many as we possibly could get in. Hopefully next year we'll have our, depending upon what, we should be able to maybe, it would be nice to get back to Lincoln Park.
I know, I was going to ask, yeah. So you guys weren't at Lincoln this year?
We were not at Lincoln. Okay. We just didn't have enough to go people go around.
Yep.
And so we had to like decide where we could manage things. So
there was a lot of it, I'll just segue into my comment and question if there aren't any others. There were a lot of administrative changes too happening and a lot of like constantly changing guidance. And I will give credit to Nicole because they have already worked out these lessons with kits prepared for many educators to go take and go into the park and all the games all worked out. And I pretty much said, you need to change everything. We don't want any kids touching the same ball or the same activity, so you need to come up with all new activities where the kids are like all touching, you know, the same thing, etc., in order to, you know, be safe and follow guidance. And then the actual partners that hosted at the parks, like Elka and not Boys and Girls Club, sorry,
YMCA.
YMCA, thank you. They had limited registrations, and there were just constant, like, daily changes. So kudos to Nicole for leading all those changes. And then my question, because I haven't observed kiddo education in a while, but the biggest aha moment for adults that I've seen when we teach nutrient fact labels is when they give the nutrients and it's per serving. So they're looking at the chips and they're saying, oh, there's only X amount of grams of fat. And we are always like per serving. So you have to multiply that, how many servings? Because if you're eating the bag, which many of us do, myself included, right? This is what you're getting. And that's when the light bulb goes off. Oh my gosh. So
we did have those. Yeah, we actually for the label lesson we took and we did a lamb, for COVID, we had to like make photocopies. But we took a popular, I'm not gonna say the brand, but a very popular rolled tortilla chip, yes, that is super popular amongst this age group. It's super spicy and super salty and super sour at the same time. And we mocked up, like we put the nutrition facts label, had the original bag, the kids call it the $1.49 bag, it's sold at the corner markets and things. And we said, who's eating this size bag? And we blocked out the name, but they knew what it was. They're like, oh, you know. And we said, who's eaten this size bag before? It's about this bag. And all of them proudly, like, yeah, you know. And they were like, okay, let's take a look at what, you know, what's in it. And okay, we explained this for one serving, and now we're gonna, you know, get written math in there, right? We're gonna times it by four, because there's four servings in here. And then you'd hear the, oh, like those noises would come out of these kids, like the hard realization that like, ooh. And then we kind of would talk about, like, what does that look like? Like, what does that many grams of fat look like? You know, and I had to tell with Crisco, and it's like, oh, it's like a couple of these. And oh, you know, kind of ruined it for some kids. But sometimes you need that little, you know, really. And we're not saying you can never have them, but if you're going to have them, get a, you know, try to get a small bag or just have once in a while. You know, we're not there to say never, but just to be mindful of, you know, what you're putting in your body and how much. So, yeah.
Nicole, is there anything analogous to this program that goes on during the school year? Is this kind of a summer only thing?
Yeah, this is a summer only. We do a lot of in classroom, which this last year was online kind of education. So a little more academic, but we still have fun as much as we're able, you know, via online to make it interactive. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your creativity and flexibility and helping educate the young people in our community, you know, with healthy habits early on that'll last them a lifetime, hopefully. So, yeah, thank you. Any other questions, committee? Nicole, do you have anything else for us as far as your future program?
That is everything. We're just getting ready for fall now and waiting to see what that's going to look like. Yeah. We're in a much better position this year as far as curriculum conversion. Like last year, we were still trying to get things converted to online delivery. And now we're ready to do both, or maybe a hybrid if we have to. So I think, you know, we're in a much better situation. We just got to wait and see what districts decide.
Agreed. There's a lot of shuffling, and you know, some districts kept going flip-flopping back and forth, and you know, some were stayed with the stay-at-home, and it was a lot easier on teachers and then us if it was just one policy. But sadly, you know, there's a lot of moving parts to this, right, and a lot of different folks to try to accommodate. So we are super flexible now, even more so than before, and we're ready to roll with virtual or in-person programming, whatever our partners are ready for. So
as horrible as COVID is, I feel like our team is, at least we had a lot of challenges and we got stronger with our skill set and how we do things. So that's the one, I don't want to say good thing, but I mean, that's one thing we found in the midst of all this is we grew stronger. So.
Great. Okay, so that leads us to number three, youth and governance. Do you know, Terry, are there any updates that we should be aware of with this? Or?
Not that I'm aware of, and Erica is not with us tonight, so I haven't received any updates from either her or Chrissy, so I'm sure next week when I officially start in the role, I'm going to be inundated with all the updates to share, but nothing for a gig at this time.
Good. That leads us to number four then, just any other educator updates or program updates that the committee should be aware of?
Well, I thought, I mean, if we have some time, I brought some things that I'd love your input on. So the first thing, I'm publishing a column again. I guess we'll just give you a look at it. This will go in the Kenosha News this Thursday, tomorrow. It'll be published likely this weekend, but it's about labor availability. So feel free to take one and just pass it. I just would love your input on, you know, is this readable? Is it data that matters? So, you know, rather than sharing things that have happened in the past, I'd love to get your input on something that's coming up. So I've got a couple of things here. So this first, you know, portion of the column is really just setting the stage. You see a lot of now hiring signs, so I'm not sure if you guys are seeing those yourself. A lot of employers saying, I can't find the workers. Where are everybody? Where is everybody? So basically pulling some data from Bureau of Labor Statistics, we know that the pandemic has certainly affected people's abilities to get back to work. However, there is an issue here of aging population statewide. So if you look at some of this data here, they're looking at the number of working aged adults versus those that are, you know, older, younger than that prime working age. So 25 to 54 is the prime working age, and now they're saying significant portion of our population is aging out of that prime period. So they're over the age of 65, and 31% increase in the number of working aged residents between 2010 and 2019. So we are seeing a huge migration of people aging out of that period of work. At the same time, you know, they're not being replaced by young people to the same extent, as we know. So looking at just what this means for Kenosha County, it's really pretty dramatic. As you see our population increasing between 2010 and 2019 by just 1.9%. The total working age population change is about 1%. But then if you look at the prime working age between those years, we've seen a decline in almost 5.7%. So just sheer numbers basically are not working in our favor. And I wanted to just, I guess, give you a chance to respond if this is making sense, or how I could potentially position this column to be relevant to our readership here in Kenosha County.
It's interesting because the millennial population is far larger than the baby boomers, so we're not doing enough to draw workers to our county when we have so many employers moving to our county. For whatever reason, we're not doing enough. I mean, I know the housing is a big thing. You know, rent is very expensive, and
right.
But
so
at the same time, you know, wages have gone up exponentially. So, you know, the rent is high, but so our wages have, and benefits have gone up along with it, with many of the jobs. So.
So perhaps why in our local context aren't we seeing more millennials kind of making up for that gap as people are aging out? To what extent are millennials able to fill in? And if they're not, then why is that?
Mm-hmm.
Good. I can
and
kind
even
of
the next,
bring that
even the
into
next
this.
Generation. Gen Y.
Yeah. Is that what generation?
Y?
Y? I'm X.
Yeah. Good. Well, I can look into that and kind of bring that to bear because, yeah, you wonder why are we not. I'm not sure what the.
But that was going on before COVID and.
Sure. And this
like
is
that.
Really looking
so,
at 2010 to 2019,
yeah.
Which is also pre-COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
So interesting. Any other questions or thoughts? Yeah.
My granddaughter had told me she's serving an internship at the VA hospital right now, but she asked me and her other grandmother if we'd be interested in going back to school because Gateway has a class for RNs that are 65 or 70 or older,
wow.
So we'll go back to work part-time.
Hmm.
So maybe there's
they're desperate for people to work, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In nursing.
Yeah. Those that hold a license.
Could you imagine going back?
I think every week, and I'm old, that I get an off job offer, and that,
yeah.
And I don't think I could be on my feet 40 or 50
mm-hmm.
hours a day
yeah.
running.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that's out there. There's some that want to do it.
Yeah.
My one question might be is, you know, employers are having challenges finding workers. When I've been out in the community, the people that seem most challenged that I've run across that are trying to find workers aren't paying anything. You know, so I'm just wondering.
Example.
What's that?
Examples. Cause
a laundromat, $10 an hour.
So, but if you go down the, you know, the factories that I know, warehouses, they don't even need you to have experience. They're paying $23 an hour. They will train you. They just want you to show up, pass a drug test, come on time, show up every day, and don't make a problem.
So I still
and
wonder.
So if you can get to the factory, you'll get benefits, 401k, great health care. You know, and I mean,
so there are opportunities in your estimation, and you're saying that many of the employers that are not necessarily in that segment are still looking to hire, but they're not able to maybe compete with that.
Well, I think the biggest problem is with this money that the government is giving away. Because if you go to work and you make, let's say, even if you make $20 an hour, let's say, okay, it's $800. You stay home, you get $300 and some from unemployment, plus $300 there. You make more money by staying home.
Right.
So.
Well, that's what
that's
I'm trying
one of the
to.
Biggest problems
yeah.
Yeah. Besides even the work environment, I had a listening session this last Monday. And believe it or not, about 35 nurses show up, which they're all complaining about what's going on with the health industry, where they're requesting them to do, without going into many details, you know, a lot of stuff. And they said, hey, we're going to quit before we do that. And there were some rallies going on in front of Aurora, Frederick Hospital. Yesterday, I believe, they were over in Madison. So those are the things that it's,
you're saying, so like pushing back, and we would like to actually improve our working conditions, or will we leave?
Excellent working conditions, and not to, you know,
among the nurses.
Get rid of the money, get rid of the $300, get rid of the unemployment, then people will go to work. But right now, they don't want to go to work.
Okay, well, see, that's what I'm trying to get at the heart of.
I think that ends September.
Well, it's going to expand. Probably, and if it does, I hope it's going to end, but maybe we'll see something.
Okay, so I can also look at what is that unemployment benefit, like Horizon, what do we know about it? I mean, potentially that's helpful for people to know, but yeah, I just wanted to expand in this column that it may not be exclusively an issue of people not wanting to work, but we'll see, we'll see.
Another question that I have there, I'm sorry, maybe,
yeah.
I don't know if you have an answer or not. Total population for 2019, it's 169. Do we have a number for 2020? Or
I don't think the census has been released yet.
No. It hasn't been released yet.
Any day now, I heard.
Okay.
So I guess one other thing would be, like, if we're seeing warehouse jobs at $23,000 or $23 an hour, and they can't make any, they can't find people, and you've got daycares and gas stations and the Vonco that's right next to our shearing center, they can't find people either. So, like, what does that mean when you can't find people at 23 and you can't find them at 10? Mm-hmm. What does that actually mean? Like, how is that playing out? And why is it that way?
And it's been like that for quite a few years. I mean, we have a business and we've seen, you know, our wages, we've inched up and we've tried everything. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that if you pay more, it doesn't necessarily draw more people. I will say the younger generation, this next generation, it is. Millennials, it didn't. They wanted more like vacation time and things like that. But the next generation, they do want more money again. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you. Any other feedback? Yeah, Dave.
Yeah, I was just going to follow up on Gabe's comment. So people that do find themselves in that position where, like Gabe was saying, it doesn't seem to make sense for them to go to work if they're able to make just as much at home. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're lazy. That you know, it's a simply an economic reality. I mean, it's if you can make more or almost as much being at home as, you know, you could out in the workforce. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're lazy. It's just, hey, if there's that opportunity out there, it's just kind of, you know, an economic reality. It's kind of like the street smart thing to do, so to speak. So yeah, just as far as like the motivation behind it, you know,
right.
goes. So yeah, doesn't necessarily mean all the people that are in that position are lazy. It might just mean that they're street smart and able to qualify for certain things, like, you know, like
or
that
wishing to be home with their kids.
Yeah. Right. As you say, as a working mother for 40-some years, I would have loved to have been able to stay home with the kids a little more often.
Yeah.
That's how you got to do it these days. They're going to grab that opportunity.
It'd be interesting, in my opinion, to see in something like this, like an example of what a person might be eligible for benefit-wise, like a single person or a family of four. Like, what is an average benefit that they're receiving? Because I think the idea that you can make just as much staying home, from the numbers I've seen at least, is not entirely accurate. But when you add in daycare, when you add in transportation, when you add in all the other things that have to be managed in order to work, that's the overarching thing. So perhaps that would add some
extra richness. Like, so the average, finding out what the average unemployment benefit is contrasted to the average, say, annual income, and just say, like, how are they stacking up, because there is that belief or that.
Right. But then also a lot of those people qualify for the child care help, rent assistance, and the heat assistance.
Yep.
That's why the shortage is for middle people. That's where we're short, you know, workers, because that's what he works for. If someone has got a job where he makes $100,000 a year, then, well, that equation is out of there.
Right.
You know, it's not worth anymore, but we're talking about regular, average people.
And almost what you're saying is to your point, it almost encourages people, you know, there is a point in, you know, the equation where it does encourage people, well, I'm just going to stay home because if I make $5 more, you know, then, why go to work and make $5 more than if I stayed home? Mm-hmm. I mean, I get your point.
Yeah.
Other than the fulfillment of doing a hard day's work.
Sure.
I get your point.
So, Amy, I would also look at what's the maximum number of weeks of unemployment somebody's allowed to have at this time. During the 2008 recession, they made extension after extension, but I've not heard that a lot of that has happened this time.
No, it has.
Normally it's 26, but if you could figure out what's the maximum that a family
it's
could...
It's been years now.
Oh, it's been
years.
Then they went up to 52, and I think
it's like I said, I haven't seen it.
I think it's even more now.
Yes,
you know,
it got extended with COVID.
More, and they just keep on going.
As well as lowering some of the requirements, like looking for work or being...
You don't have to look for work.
Being in some type of education or something, those currently don't apply. So,
There is some friends of mine that they have a business, and they hired some people that went in, they just left, and they went for unemployment. He called the unemployment office, so you know when they call them, and they say, "Hey, I got work for them. They can come in and work for them." And they say, "No," I say, "They put it in there. They're afraid of COVID, so they're an afterthought." And they give them the money. So. I think we're just giving away money. Let's put it in that way. That's the biggest problem.
And what's the unemployment rate right now? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, what if it's at 2-3%, 3.4? I remember seeing, in my head, I keep thinking with all these job openings, we must be, you know, at like 10% or something, but it really doesn't seem to be
very low.
Yeah.
Too.
But they've taken out
they're
the people.
They're talking about the new people.
Yeah, they've
they don't count the people that are in there week after week after week.
They've taken them out already.
They take them out.
What do you mean they take them out?
They don't count them as unemployed, but they're still getting paid.
Yeah, they've taken out the people that have stopped looking.
Well, that's different. So people that stopped looking aren't getting unemployment.
They don't have to go look for anything.
So you can still find out the number of people who are actually drawing benefits, though. That's the part. That's the percentage you're looking for, not the people that are looking for work.
The number that they say, well, the unemployment rate is, you know, this. that's the number that mm-hmm. So when you and I think unemployed, we think when we think the people that aren't working, we think stay-at-home moms, the or dads, the retired people that can't work for whatever reason, physically or mentally, things like that. They've re-added back in the people that have just stopped looking the last couple of years, but are on long-term unemployment.
I've never heard of long-term unemployment. What is it?
That was my term.
Okay, so.
Because they've been on unemployment for a couple years now.
Can you look into that? I've never heard of that before.
Like, is there a number for totals drawing an unemployment
yes.
benefit?
Yes.
That's what we want to
yes.
know. Not necessarily the unemployment rates, which wouldn't necessarily be.
I handle it at work.
They're not going to tell us. That's the problem. They only tell us what they want to tell us. What they feel that they cannot go around that.
So, Amy, if I'm understanding you correctly, what you're saying is the technical definition of unemployment rate is they ask you, have you been looking for work in the last 6 months? And if you say no, then they just move on and they wouldn't consider you unemployed. If you answer the question, yes, I have been looking, and then they say, are you working? Then you... Are you looking?
And you got to put in there, no, then it's COVID related, you're not looking.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I guess I don't really know
there's a difference. It's a matter of definition. So there's a technical definition for what qualifies as the unemployment rate.
Exactly.
And then there is, well, how many people actually are not working?
Right, because it's never going to be
things.
Zero, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
there's always going to be people that
Just,
are not working.
To give you an idea, last year my wife, she works part-time. She's a hairdresser, so they closed the shop. I mean, she could not go in. So then she applied for unemployment, which I was doing it for her basically. And there is a question in there, is your unemployment, because, not the right words, but the meaning, because COVID related. And they say, if you say yes, skip the next couple questions. Mm-hmm. And that's it, yes it is. So you don't have to look for a job, you don't have to do anything else.
So what I can tell you is, after the 2008 recession, what we were seeing was people had tried to find work, and just work was so difficult to find. They would exhaust their unemployment benefits, so they were getting nothing. So then they were no longer counted as receiving unemployment benefits because they weren't. So you would see your unemployment rates just dropping, and what was is many people just... they no longer qualified for benefits, they're no longer receiving benefits, so it looks like your unemployment rate is dropping, but what it is you're just not counting people that aren't getting benefits anymore.
Right.
So that's what I'm wondering is going on right now. I'm not so concerned about the people that have aged out of or no longer qualify for the unemployment, but how many people right now are still physically receiving unemployment benefits? Mm-hmm.
I don't think they have those numbers. One of the things that's concerning me.
Oh, go ahead,
Gabe.
Wasn't the law passed that people that had children 7 and under get a monthly check for each child for $360 a month, and if they're under 13, they get $240? If somebody's home with 3 or 4 children, they're getting a nice bundle every month.
That
besides your unemployment.
Besides your unemployment. So that's what it is.
So they're not going to go to work.
That only goes against your...
Correct.
Wow.
I got twenty-three dollars. Just to give you an idea, again, I'm talking about myself,
right.
Wife.
Right.
She was out for 8 weeks. The first day that they let her in, she just ran there, seriously.
I think that's probably to get away from you.
So she did go in. We filed the taxes, right? Mm-hmm. She paid taxes and the money. Well, all of a sudden, I see my checking account, $300 and some dollars. I know it was $300 and some, I don't recall it. And I was like, what the heck is staffed, you know, in the same IRS. So first I thought, because my wife is getting Social Security, you know, and she's still working. So I figured, because usually if you work and you make money, I said, probably for the last 3 years, they feel that she made some money and they give her, you know, some extra money
for something.
Yeah, for Social Security. Well, a few days after that, I received something in the mail from IRS that you should receive or already receive $300, I don't recall the exact number, $300 and some dollars, because they changed the law and she did not have to pay any taxes on that unemployment money. So right there, she made another $300 and some dollars. So those, I think she was up for 7 weeks, something, you know, whatever it was closed. She made three times how much money she was making if she was working. That's good. That's wrong. You know, like people say, well, what did she give it back? I say, I would definitely give it back if everybody else will do it, you know? No, I mean, I'm serious. But she was making three times as much than working.
$1,200 or something like that.
You know? Interesting. So she works part time, she doesn't make much. And at that time, it was $600 a week that they're working.
Wow. Well, then maybe I like kind of reposition this to talk specifically about unemployment benefits. I mean, that seems like it's labor availability, but really more and more, I think more people reading the Kenosha News want to get into perhaps a little bit more detail about what are we talking about with unemployment benefits, unemployment, yeah, I don't know if it's rates per se, but you're saying just like sheer numbers, how many people are collecting, drawing on those benefits, and what does that look like for
that? Would be great to know.
Something. We'll see. Okay. Well, watch for the column. We'll see what comes out. It's to be determined.
Stay tuned.
Follow the data.
I have some updates from Jen Reese, who's our interim 4-H person. Jen has shared in July held three really successful and fun 4-H summer camps, the day camp for 5K through 2nd, base camp for 3rd through 5th grade, and adventure camp for 6th through 8th. Next week is Kenosha County Fair. If you're attending, be sure to check out the youth projects and animal exhibits. These are examples of the skills 4-H members have been developing over the years. Swing by the Clover booth for the little ones, where 4-H members and volunteers will be promoting 4-H, so sort of trying to recruit new families. And then when you're hungry, stop by the, what? Can we read this? I'm a nutrition stove. Stop by the, someone else say it, Poppin' Pizza Stand.
Oh.
Is that a red, yellow, or
it's
green?
It's a once in a while.
Once in a while, yeah.
Once a year.
Once a year.
There you go.
Where proceeds will support Kenosha County 4-H programs. So do you know someone who would make a great 4-H volunteer? The next orientation will be held virtually on September 18th at 6:30. So keep that in mind. And if you know anyone who'd like to join 4-H, enrollments will begin October 1st, and it is open to youth who are in 5-year-old kindergarten and beyond, 1 year beyond high school graduation. So there's the website to enroll, and you can always email any of us with any questions, too.
Great. Thank you, Jen.
You're welcome.
Any other educator program updates?
I'll just share the general food-wise. Even though Nicole is part of our feature, we have pretty much gone through the summer parks. We did a great series with Assisi Homes of our new strength training program for seniors called Strong Bodies. They did that via their tablets, which is really wonderful to see. We have already posted for my position, the administrator of Foodwise, so my first order of business, or one of the multiple first ones, is hiring for my position. And what else is happening? We're planning for FY22, so our because we're federally funded, this runs on a federal fiscal year, so it starts October 1. and we'll be back in all the schools, some in person, some virtually, but we're giving out assignments and working with partners to accommodate whatever they're doing. So overall, things are a little choppy, but onward.
Yep, and for horticulture and youth development, positive youth development programming, just check in with our website too. I'm not sure, they've got a lot going on, so although they're not here, we can always track it from the website.
Okay, great. And April mentioned that she does have the PowerPoint that Nicole shared, and so as our standard practice, April, if you just email that out to all the committee members, that would be a great resource to be able to follow up with. Thank you. Okay, just something to be aware of coming up. I'll also mention this in our planning and development portion, but I want the UW educators to be aware. In a couple of months, our October meeting, that's going to be our budget hearing. So traditionally, what this committee does is just foregoes the UW extension portion, and we do the budget hearing for the planning and development during that 6 o'clock hour. So we're in communication with other committee chairs and with finance and things. At this point, we're planning to have our October meeting be Wednesday the 13th, which would be the normal day that our committee meets. And so, again, the budget planning portion will be at 6 o'clock, and then at 7 o'clock, we'll just do our normal land development. April, You've been in on some of that communication, and again, that's your understanding as well. At this point, our plan is to meet on October 13th,
right.
And then we will not have a UW extension portion, other than any budget discussions, but as far as educator updates or things like that. Okay, great. Well, that concludes this portion of our meeting. We'll resume in about 10 minutes in the hall here. For those of you that are traveling, keep an eye on the weather, be safe, and thank you so much for everybody's updates tonight. We appreciate your hard work. Thank you.
Thank you.